This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, Daimler Chrysler announces 13,000 hourly jobs will be cut, and Africa may get a media image makeover. Joining us are E.R. Shipp, professor in journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication, plus John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute senior fellow in public policy. They're both at our New York bureau. And we've also got, from Alexandria, Virginia, Ron Christie, vice president of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and former special assistant to President George W. Bush. So, Ron, I'm going to start with you. Daimler Chrysler. 13,000 jobs gone. Its New Ark, Delaware plant is going to close. Executives say, okay, we're redesigning. We've got a new business model. But U.S. automakers, are they on their knees? Is this the end of an era, at least the era of the truck and the SUV, if not the era of American autos?
Well, I don't think that we're at the end of the era for the U.S. automaker, but U.S. automakers are in a very difficult position right now to remain competitive with the world market. If you look in the United States, the transportation sector accounts for the majority of the petroleum that's used in the United States. And breaking that down a little further, cars and light trucks are the largest users of petroleum. Given the reliance on foreign supply of oil and given the spikes of energy costs in the United States, I think the American auto industry is facing the reality that consumers are switching to more fuel-efficient cars, and those gas-guzzling light trucks and SUVs, consumers are turning away from those, and as a result, the U.S. auto industry is suffering.
Now, ER, there's a lot of talk about China, which seems poised to enter the U.S. auto market. You've got Japanese, Korean, Yugoslavian car makers. Does this really bode ill for the American car market and for the many people, African-American and of all races, who work in the auto industry?
Well, in the short term, it does. In the long term, it may not be such a bad thing to get people thinking about fuel efficiencies and even using public transportation rather than driving everywhere they have to go. The issue of which workers are going to be affected. I was interested that in your previous segment talking about the debt that people have and how it's very hard to become middle class and to retain middle class status these days. This is definitely going to be a hit on those people, black, white, and otherwise, who have been depending upon the auto industry to give them that leg up in the middle class.
John, I just really wonder, looking at what is happening with the U.S. auto industry, African Americans, a lot of folks were able to go from high school into the plants and earn a good living. And is there a real undermining of the black community, or have we already reacted to the downward slump in terms of the good working class job that seems to be disappearing in this era?
Well, you know, there was a grand period from the 20s into the 1960s when it was possible for a black man or sometimes woman with no education to have a good solid job in an auto plant. And I think we're taught to look to that as the way things should be, when in fact, I think we need to think of it more as a matter of who moved my cheese. This factory closing is a symbol of the fact that those days unfortunately can't come back, and in a way, in a global sense, so to speak, it's for a good reason, because the fewer of those big gas-guzzling cars we produce, the more leverage we'll have on certain rather pressing geopolitical issues elsewhere. But this is a wake-up call for us to realize that the old idea of the black father who works for the River Rouge Ford plant in Detroit, that was a good thing. But that's gone, and that was actually only for about one-tenth of black American history, and we've coped in other ways. And nowadays, we need to start looking at other solid working class jobs of that kind. Like nowadays, when you see a black security guard, that's the equivalent of somebody who used to work in the black factory. We need to look to other jobs like that and adjust. It's an era that is unfortunately and fortunately over, and we just have to face the challenge of the future.
But security guards don't make nearly as much as auto workers.
Depends on how long you stay as a security guard. And if you become something like a real estate inspector or a building inspector, or even if you have a job as commercial fisherman is a job that is not closed to black people, and you can start making good money as a commercial fisherman. It's just a matter of imagination, I think.
But we're using up all the fish.
Yeah, that's another whole topic.
Yeah,
but
we always have these.
But that is very true. Well, you know, I just want to turn to another related issue about money. And ER, you mentioned coming out of our previous segment, the whole idea of Americans in jeopardy because of credit card debt. But now, forward to 2007, Bank of America is offering credit cards to customers without Social Security numbers, many of whom are undocumented immigrants. Now, this is part of a trend by banks across the country to cater to the Latino community. Some are offering checking accounts and mortgages to undocumented immigrants. I guess there's a couple of factors here. One, does this sound like good business? And two, does it kind of tar and feather the Latino community with this image of being undocumented?
Well, it's good business for the banks. They're charging super high interest rates. They're charging fees to apply for these special credit cards. So they're going to make money. For the person on the other end, the consumer, it seems to represent a way to obtain credit, to obtain credit history, so that eventually one might even be able to buy a house. That's what some people have said they're working towards.
Or open a business.
But they're having to pay a big price. I am conflicted on this because I like to see people with opportunities. But the issue becomes, are we winking and nodding and saying we don't care about illegal immigration anymore?
And we are. And as far as I'm concerned, that's just one of those eggs that we're going to have to break to make the omelet. I think this is the most wonderful thing because in the larger scheme of things, we're talking about microcredit. And as rapacious as those interest rates seem, it's funny, if you look around the world, very poor people have a way of coping with them. And so you combine the capitalist impulse of the evil cigar-chomping bankers with the initiative of people on the bottom. And next thing you know, you have social growth. I think that this whole model should be extended even to the lower economic part of the African-American community. Microcredit is the next big thing, I suspect.
Well, John, what about the political implications? I mean, at this point, should the U.S. government be involved in any way with regulating who gets credit if, in fact, people don't have green cards?
Well, you know, the way I feel about it, although I know for many people this would raise hackles, is that those people aren't leaving, and it is unclear to me that there's any kind of technology we could come up with that could keep an appreciable number of them out. So we can argue till the cows come home as to whether or not they should be there and what the meaning of the word amnesty is. And in the meantime, they're there, they're living places, they're in the schools, they're in the hospital system, and they're not going anywhere.
And their children,
so we have to be pragmatic.
Their children, in many cases, are citizens because they have
exactly.
been born here.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to throw the wet blanket into this, gentleman, but see, this is exactly why I'm against what Bank of America is doing. I think that John's absolutely right that microcredit is the way of the future, and particularly looking at what we've seen with redlining for insurance in African-American communities and the reluctance of some banks perhaps to extend credit to African-Americans, I think that's something
yep.
we would all agree that we should combat. But when you specifically look at a bank, an institution that's in it just to make a buck, they're charging higher interest rates to people who they know or have a high likelihood of knowing are here illegally. That's thwarting our immigration laws. It's against the law. I understand that these folks are here and that's a separate issue, but for a financial institution to decide, well, we're going to make a big buck off of a group of people who are poor and desperate, and we're going to charge them these rates, I think it's wrong, and I think that it's these types of actions by big corporations and big entities that allow illegal immigration to thrive in this country because people know that they can come here, they can work, and now they can get credit, and they can get a credit card from a major institution.
Well, Ron, you've worked in the White House with the Vice President. What is the White House thinking about this? Does the White House even consider the implications of this kind of a commercial transaction that takes place on U.S. soil?
Well, for having worked for both the Vice President and the President of the United States, they are both very concerned about controlling our borders. But I think as you've heard the President, particularly in recent months, talk about the need for comprehensive immigration reform, the President feels very strongly that we need to take steps to address those illegal immigrants who are here in the United States, and that despite some of the calls by members of the House of Representatives to just build a fence and lock everybody out, that we have to deal with the 12 to 16 million undocumented individuals in the country. So without speaking for the White House directly, I can tell you that the White House is very concerned about the individuals who are here, and that all Americans, recognizing that we have illegal aliens who are in our borders, we have to find a way to make it work so that you're not just throwing people right out and just showing them the exit, but this credit program is one way, undoubtedly, that a big institution like Bank of America is trying to help folks assimilate into society.
All right. Well, in case you're just tuning in, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We were just talking with Ron Christie, VP of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and former special assistant to President George W. Bush. We've also got E.R. Shipp, professor in journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication, and John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute senior fellow in public policy. Let's turn to Africa. I just recently got back. I've enjoyed a great trip to Southern Africa. But if you go to Nigeria, there is an issue on the table, Africa's media image. There's a big summit, Africa's International Media Summit. Good name, very simple. They want to concentrate on the good in Africa and rebrand the continent. Now, John, how do you rebrand an entire continent?
Well, for one thing, you don't. And I hate to say this, but, you know, having been to Africa more than once, I would say that I think that the negative aspects of Africa are something that require an urgent attention, and perhaps more than the fact that they have interesting animals and vibrant cultures, etc. I can see why they might want tourism, but the AIDS crisis, the thugocracy crisis, the malaria crisis, the war in the middle of the entire continent that rages on and off, I'm not sure that I'm interested in the idea that we are stereotyping Africa or we're focusing on the negative and not the positive and belittling the people or something like that. Unless what this is really about is let's foster tourism to Africa, and that's fine with me. I'm afraid that what's going on in that particular continent is too uniquely awful right now for us to paper it over with pretty words.
I think it's not just about tourism, but business in general. And E.R., you were saying you agree, but is there a way that this kind of rebranding effort, although it sounds on some level trivial, could help bring more business and could help stimulate the economies and help solve some of the problems that John just outlined?
Well, the problem isn't so much that the economies need stimulating. It's that there needs to be a whole new leadership in many countries,
yep,
because the money is there. CNN has been featuring a series of stories this past week about the oil in Nigeria and how much of that money is flowing into the hands of a small group of people while nearby residents of the area are starving. So I don't think rebranding Nigeria would mean anything for those people until there's a new leadership and a new morality that's in place. If anything, we are now beginning to focus on Africa as a continent, not as a country. I remember a few years back when UN had a Security Council meeting or something, and various heads of state would stop by the New York Times. So one day I wondered who was there that day, because there was all kinds of security outside. And somebody said, the president of Africa.
In a newsroom?
Yeah. So I think we've gotten beyond that.
Oh,
but the issue still remains that Africa has a lot of serious problems that a branding of it is not going to really solve.
Ron, what do you think?
Well, I couldn't agree with my two colleagues more. Having spent a lot of time in Cameroon and having represented the prime minister of Cameroon, you don't need a rebranding of the African continent as it relates to tourism or to try to bring dollars in. You need to rebrand some of the leadership in some of these African countries, particularly in Western Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa. For goodness sakes, if you look at Cameroon, for one, a majority of the people on the government payroll in Cameroon work for Camair, an airline that has been defunct for several years that isn't flying. There is rampant corruption in many of these countries. There is a lot of vigorous, I would say, natural resources that are there to be sold and there to be utilized by the people of these countries. But unfortunately, it seems that in many of these countries, the power and the wealth is in the hands of a handful of individuals, and we need to rebrand the governments and rebrand and have democracy and transparency rather than trying to rebrand the continent for tourism.
Well, maybe you need to brand the way they used to brand cows in the West. You need to put some heat to their butts. and get them to do the right thing.
Well, there certainly are a lot of leadership issues on the continent, but at one point we talked to an entrepreneur who's giving out a leadership prize for people who step down from power. Our own NPR Special Africa correspondent, Charlene Hunter-Gault, has talked extensively about how the continent is not just doom and despair. So what do you think, ER, could be done positively that acknowledges the need for leadership transition, acknowledges the crises, but also points out that there is hope and that there are people who are trying to change the systems?
Well, we do hear those stories periodically of specific incidents where positive things are happening, whether it's Oprah's school opening or some new telecommunications company deciding to do business on the continent. So, yes, we can focus on those things. But I think, as we've all been saying, you can't polish over the fact that this is a continent with a lot of deep problems. So what we can do maybe is to have more of the African-American summits where people get together and talk about problems they're going to try to solve together, and then have some kind of accountability. But you can't just pretend that saying we're an African people and let's throw some money to Africa is going to solve any problem.
It's hard to attract business to a country where one out of three people are sick or dying, for example.
Well, we have almost no time, but I want all three of you to answer this just very briefly. Should African Americans be more involved in development in Africa? Just give me a yes or a no. Ron?
Absolutely.
John?
I'd like to see a little more concentration on our own community, and then we'll get to Africa. Other people should be taking care of Africa, I think.
ER?
I agree more with John, I think.
All right. Well, that's a wrap. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
From our New York bureau, we had E.R. Shipp, professor in journalism, Hofstra University School of Communication, along with John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute senior fellow in public policy. And from Alexandria, Virginia, Ron Christie, VP of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and former special assistant to President George W. Bush. And next on News and Notes, author Lisa Gray Garcia tells us about being a young kid on the streets, and we meet a Mississippi reporter who's helped solve high-profile civil rights murders.